Hi, and welcome to episode 495 of the MWA podcast. Only five away from 500. Wonder if there's a special episode. Well, yes, there is. Anyway, that's coming up. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sean Markenbein. Today, we're excited to have Garrett Roberson as our guest. Garrett is a professional furniture designer and maker located in Michigan. He recently completed a big furniture commission from One Massive Tree. He is also known as HMR_woodcraft on Instagram. So welcome to the show, Garrett.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Well, fantastic.
Awesome.
I'm really excited to talk to you about this big commission that you just completed. But before we get into that, let's dip our toes in the woodworking news. So first up, this, as we're recording, this just came out today that Fine Woodworking is having a New England event, and they're calling it Fine Woodworking New England. And it's on April 26th and 27th. And it's at the Connecticut Valley School of Woodworking, Bob Van Dyke School. So this should be pretty interesting. It's kind of like a mini Fine Woodworking Live. They got a bunch of people that are going to be there doing demonstrations. They got vendors there. The interesting thing is the show is free. It's 2 days, like I said, April 26th to 27th.
Yeah, as Diami, you chatted with us earlier, this is more of a kind of a free demonstration walk-up kind of thing, which is really cool. It's not the same as Fine Woodworking Live with the class, you know, stuff and events is so much, but good names are going to be there. I mean, it's pretty cool to see this kind of rekindled with their new ownership, right? Like we were kind of speculating before. And so this is maybe a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I hope it comes a stepping stone to a full event.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The description reminds me of like a Lee Nielsen event.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Connecticut Valley School of Woodworking plus, you know, a bunch of different well-known furniture makers. So, yeah,
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, it kind of has a little Lee Nielsen event tack to it, because you know a few of them that I had. That's the first time I met Frank Straza at one of those Lee Nielsen events. So, and he was doing demonstrations there and stuff.
Oh.
And that's when you could actually talk to him, because now when he demonstrates, you're like, you know, three rows back of people in front of him. So
he was approachable at Handworks, but yet I guess it was the right time of day.
Yes. No, he's a great guy. He's very, very nice guy. But anyway, this looks like a great episode. So any of y'all plan on attending April 26th and 27th? I don't know. I guess.
What day of the week is that? That is.
I guess, Brian, you're probably the closest.
Yeah, you're the closest. That's marathon week for me. So it's an America weekend.
Oh, see that?
Only a half, but.
How much do we have in the budget for travel?
It's a Friday, Saturday for our listeners here.
We might have enough to pay Brian's gas money there.
Or like maybe for a meal in the airport. Y'all, we need some more Patreon supporters so we can report back from events like this.
Yep.
If you'd like to sign up.
Yes. Well, just wait a minute. Yeah, we'll give you the full deets.
I might have to, you know, I might have to do some client visits in Massachusetts right around that time. And
really? There you go.
You know, gosh forbid, have to take a little detour.
Oh no!
Yeah, move a few dates around. Make sure you're near town on Friday. Slip over.
Yeah. They do have a lot of great people on there. You know, a few of these, of course, have been on the podcast. Our good friend David Duyard, who is just on, will be there doing some Greenwood chair building. But anyway, check that out. There will be a link to this, and even though it is free, they want you to pre-register because they want to, you know, at least know how many people are coming and so that they can prepare for it. So they do have a pre-registration on the website. So anyway, but looks pretty cool. So check that out. Next up, there's a new woodworking school, the Wendell Castle Workshop. So the Wendell Castle organization has been around for years, you know, promoting, you know, everything that Wendell Castle did, you know, touring his facility and all of that. And, you know, still making some stuff, I believe, in the workshop. But now they've opened up a school and they're going to be teaching some interesting classes. They have a lot of classes, veneering classes, sculptural classes, of course, and kinds of things like that. And it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, the instructor page is quite, I mean, this is like a who's who.
Stylist
Hunter. Yeah, Larissa will be there. Mike Fortune, Tim Coleman, you know, Yuri Kobayashi. So a lot of good names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is another one of these Northeastern schools. Y'all have all the woodworking schools.
Yeah, you do.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
These guys just live in the wrong part of the country.
Without tripping over a hand plane or a woodworking school.
Yeah. Exactly.
cheap used machinery. It's all here.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Just take it for free.
I'm not sure that Vic Teslin guy there under is. Maybe stay away from that.
Yeah, it's going to be a metric and stuff, you know.
It's a design class, so there's probably no measurements involved. It's like, you know, yay high.
Yay
high. This will be in Scottsville, New York.
Yeah, Scottsville, New York, where they're located. 10 miles south of Rochester. Yeah, so not too bad, but looks interesting. And plus, you know, while you're there, you could get to see all the great Wendell Castle stuff within the little organization that they got there with his workshop and facility and all of that fun stuff. So, yeah, check that out. That looks pretty, pretty cool. If only it was a little closer. Anyway, the other big news since we last recorded was about SawStop releasing their patent to the public. And this is kind of interesting. I think there is a proposal with the Consumer Product Safety Commission to basically make saws more safer. So in light of that, SawStop, you know, decided to dedicate their patent to the public. A couple of things I've heard, whether true or not, is that, hey, their patent was about to expire in the first place. And the other thing is even if you release this patent into the public, it's going to take a while for the competitors to tool up and even take advantage of it if they want to. I think even Bosch, who had a similar technology, said it would take them another couple of years to do redo their saw because they had that little job site saw that had the...
Technology. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
Diami and I were in
Iowa. Reflex or Relax or something like that.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yes.
Yeah, something. Relax. I don't know.
but it was cool. I mean, I actually, somewhere I have my old Palm Pre video of a hot dog, you know, shoving a blade down into a saw when it made contact. When I saw that in person. And that never came really out, did it? I mean, was it?
Largely available for a few months till they had an injunction put on it. Now, I don't know if they continue to sell that overseas or not.
That's true.
I don't know.
I appreciate that.
But so, I think Festool, you know, who bought SawStop or their parent company, Festool's parent company bought SawStop. I think they do have a saw in Europe that does have some of SawStop's technology. So,
knowing what I used to know about. Like SawStop went out of their way to create what's called a patent web. I don't know if any of you guys do patent regulations, but it's like an intertwined patent to patent thing. That's, you know, you think you have a brand new technology and there's almost no way to create a blade halting action without violating the patent web. My hunch is that it's going to expire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody's that altruistic. I might be wrong. I might be wrong.
Well, that would make sense. That fits the timetable. It's 10 years, right? So the thing is like, it's, they said that they will release it the day that it becomes a requirement,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know. In the other article I read, it had the date, but these other tool companies can start using the patent now to develop.
They just have to, they just have to negotiate and pay some fees.
They don't have to negotiate anything until it goes to market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they could have a brand new saw ready to go, and then when they release the patent, off they go.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So if you are a dear listener and you have a SawStop like technology that in your back pocket, your time is coming.
Yep. And bring it out.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to use the one from the patent. Otherwise, you might get sued by for cheating the patent.
Well, if you had a different technology, and you could argue that the CPSC says, hey. They're now mandating technology.
Yeah.
I think if you brought a technology that meets that mandate out, nobody's going to come after you. It's not worth it anymore.
Yeah. I know some of those high end European sliders, the, you know, very expensive Felders and whatnot do have some technology in there that will lower the blade and stuff like that. I think it's based on sight, like if they see something get close to the blade, that'll drop it down or something like that. But
yeah, it's like a sight curtain.
Something like that. But I mean, the cheapest saw that's on is probably, you know, $10,000-$15,000. So definitely not in the realm of the hobbyist woodworker for certain, or even, you know, a small professional woodworker. So, you know, it's interesting. Now, I know SawStop gets a lot, and I saw a lot of vitriol in some of the comments about, well, they should have released this years ago and stuff like that. And it's just like, guys, these guys are in a business. They're trying to make money here. They're not going, if you owned a company that you had a preferred technology and you had a patent on it, you would not release it. I mean, you know, especially if you're a public company, you can get sued if you did that.
Your shareholders would sue you.
Exactly. So, they're not going to just willy-nilly release a patent for the goodwill because, you know, hey, that would be a nice thing to do. But that also puts some stymie on not only their business practices, but imagine you going through this whole thing to develop this product. You at least want to get some of your money back that you spent on developing it. So, you know, it's kind of, it sounds nice, but I think, you know, you're not going to see anybody innovate if those type of barriers were in place.
Yeah. And, you know, the SawStop saw wouldn't exist if all of the manufacturers hadn't refused to license the technology when he came up with it.
So, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm glad that they didn't, because that saw is so much better quality than all the stuff that's, you know, the mainstream stuff that's on the market now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, you can't buy a, you know, just a basic, well, or more than basic, table saw at that quality level, or you couldn't until SawStop came out, because everything else was bought by a, you know, a venture capital fund that was draining all the assets out of the company. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's good the way it turned out, the way it did, as much as people hate it. But
I think from a safety standpoint, when I was still in the operating room, we saw these table saw injuries all the time, almost every single week. And I'd say 90% of the time, it was not a brand new novice user. It was it was almost word for word. They would say, I've been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah.
I lost something, mm-hmm. distracted me for half a second. My finger's gone.
Yep.
Oh, it's almost exactly the same thing that you hear. And, you know, that blade is spinning faster than your brain can even make a neural connection. So the technology is there. I know you may not like the concept of it, but the technology is there to just make the hobby and the profession a little bit safer.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the benefit here is what they've developed and had on market. If it at this time and this change, it becomes more available to put in more saws and similar tools, it's just going to make the whole thing safer.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and maybe a little bit of the ire for SawStop being proprietary for the longest time might slowly go away as it just becomes ubiquitous. They're like, oh, okay, the next saw I buy will have the ability to save me if I should I get distracted. It's the biggest insurance policy, you know, for a thing like that, because again, 30 years of experience, and it just happens one day, that's what you're guarding against. It's not next time, it's the when. It's really cool that this technology did come out, and hopefully it continues to get better and better and better, and so it just becomes more and more available.
Table saw injuries can be extremely nasty, and they're very hard to repair. We used to see those a lot. You never really saw bandsaw injuries very much, but you would see table saw injuries and people shooting themselves with nailers. So you'd see like long, you know, 16D nails. And
all right. You need a nailer with flesh.
Technology. Oh, I got some nailer stories. Oh, I don't know.
Protecting nailer.
Yeah. My coworker back in the day was walking a foundation, nailing down the edge of sheeting. And like you do when you're stepping up, put your hand on your knee to like kind of brace yourself as you go up.
Oh no, don't even go there. Yeah, ow, yeah. You're making me hurt right now.
He had a nail gun in his hand.
No.
And point down.
Yes, yes.
Bad move.
No thanks.
Had the finger on the trigger already and had the auto fire.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go back and edit in. Please skip ahead 30 seconds. Please skip ahead.
So now I can go on and say it was a ring shank.
Okay.
And so it was nasty. Anyway.
Oh, man.
Yes. Any type of protect yourself from those times of mindless distraction is what we all kind of need and we don't want to think about it. And so it's just better if it's there and it's smart enough to know when. But you still have the problem with a SawStop. I'm not a SawStop owner. I think you guys are, some of you. If you're doing wet wood, treated wood, and you either forget to turn it off, you throw a blade unnecessarily, or you turned it off and put it and forgot to turn it back on the next time you're cutting until you go, oh my God, that wasn't on yet. What if? You know,
no, if you stop the saw, it resets.
Does it reset once it's off?
Yeah. Okay. If you start up the saw, it's in safe mode. Yeah.
It's more, I've heard that, like, oh man, this is really wet treated wood and it popped it. I'm like, well, okay. I mean, that's an unfortunate $100 expense to replace. But
yeah. In SawStop's favor, I've never heard anyone say that their finger was accidentally cut off and the safety feature didn't work.
Mm-hmm. So you want false negatives, not false positives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In this case, yes.
Yeah.
My miter gauge will proclaim to that. Yeah.
Yes, I've the miter gauge has claimed two blades on our saw.
Hmm. Interesting. That sounds like someone wants to develop a SawStop safe miter gauge. Say that three times fast. Anyway.
Plastic.
Yeah. Some sort of phenolic or plastic or something. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gary, do you have a SawStop?
I don't. No. I have the Grizzly 3 horsepower. Was it the 1023 that I think has been for sale forever with the built-in router table?
Oh, okay. Okay. That, all right. Cool.
That was my first ever big purchase for my shop was that. I had that Bosch, I think, job site saw that a lot of people start with.
Yeah, I had one of those too. Yep.
Yeah, which, I mean, it worked pretty well for a long time, but you know, when the time came, I was not in the situation to get a SawStop, but I could afford the Grizzly, so that's what I went with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool.
And those types of decisions will continue to be made, but
yes, again, exactly.
Maybe the next Grizzly you buy will have a flash sensing technology in
it. It will have to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll have to.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Be industry mandate, right?
And hopefully you're not buying it because you cut a finger off. And decide you want a safer saw.
You know what's funny is the only time I've ever actually injured myself on a woodworking tool, it was my bandsaw.
Me too.
And it was a total brain fart moment. And my bandsaw is hooked to a separate dust collector that turns on with the saw. And I was like, I need to clean all the dust off this thing. I need the dust collector running. So I turned the saw on and I just mindlessly brushed sawdust towards the blade, not even thinking about it. And about a split second before my hand got near the blade, I thought, what the hell are you doing? And then bam, and it just caught the tip of my finger and put about a 1/4-inch cut right down through the nail and the fingertip and everything. Yeah.
No drift, I hope. Very straight.
No drift.
Yeah, very straight. Very straight cut.
Very good.
It's actually... It's actually the same finger I sewed through when I was like 14. So I sewed 3 stitches through my finger. My left pointer finger has had a lot of damage over the years.
It's your sacrificial finger.
It is. Yeah.
Are you left-handed? Test with.
No, I'm right-handed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, good.
No big deal.
Yeah, spare so it works one. Out okay.
The only time I've ever cut myself on my bandsaw is touching the bearing, the thrust bearing on the side of the blade.
Sure.
And I brushed up against it. That thing was spinning like crazy, and I brushed up against it. That sliced good. But anybody else have an interesting bandsaw war story?
The only time I've really been injured is on the drill press, and that's kind of funny, actually, is I was drilling something. This is years ago, and I was bending over to look at, I guess, how well the hole was drilled or where it was drilling, and I released the handle to bring the drill back up, and the handle just hit me right square in the middle of the forehead. And I mean, left a knot that didn't go away for 3 weeks.
That's a strong ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was seeing stars the whole 9 yards. I don't know. Probably mild concussion. Who knows? But sure. I mean, I go, this is the stupidest woodworking injury.
They happen.
But anyway, well, moving right along, let's move on to our Patreon shout out. So who do we have to thank this week?
Yeah, you know, we'd love to give a big shout out to our Patreon supporters. Thank you for all you are. Today, we're giving that shout out to my dad, Scott, Wisniewski. What a guy. Pops. What a guy.
Yep. Good job, Scott.
Good job.
In recent news, he upgraded to fiber internet, so he'll be downloading this episode on his new fiber internet. Well done.
Nice.
Yeah, everybody, get on the fiber.
I need to do that upgrade, too. I haven't done it yet.
I've had it for more than a year. Get fiber. It's better than copper. But anyway, back to Patreon. If you would like to join my dad in supporting us, and please do so we can travel to shows as they start popping up, go to patreon.com/MWApodcast and support us there.
Please do. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sean's dad.
He needs to leave us a review. Has he ever left us a review?
Yeah.
Probably not. He texts me every once in a while. Maybe I should just transpose it into a review.
Actually, we need stories from when you were a kid. That's what we really need.
Oh, maybe not.
Well, before we get those stories, and believe me, listeners, we will be sharing those as soon as we get them. Let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Brian, what are you working on?
Just got home from about 2 weeks of travel. Had a little bit of time today. Started ripping down the 8-quarter cherry for this desk that I'm going to make. Excited.
Good. This is for your wife, the desk for your wife, right?
Yeah, well, no, she's going to fight me for this one. You know, I went up and told her, I said, hey, you know, the guys are busting on you, saying there's glitter all over this, you know, air-dried, beautiful grain walnut. And she just starts laughing. I'm like, you don't realize what you're doing to, you know, to this kind of beautiful wood. But no, this one she's going to have to fight me for. It'll also be very heavy, so she's not going to be lifting it up by herself. Yeah. Just ripping away. I'm gonna get that glued up. I'll be home for a couple weeks before I have to go travel just a little bit more. So I'm hoping to get this ripping. I have to say though, you know, I'm a big fan of walrus oil in the last few months here, and I did the walrus oil kind of like how they did a nice video on it, like, you know, sand to say 220, and then raise the grain, flatten it, and then when you're applying the oil. To use like a 300-400 grit pad to kind of rub it in. And that dang thing is like glass. It's smooth as hell. It's, I was really impressed. You know, I do not know what I'm doing in the finishing world by any means, but this is probably one of the nicer finishes I ever put on.
Well, as I say, if you find something you like and works for you, stick with it. So yeah, how long does this stuff take to cure?
Well, they say you can like reapply in like a day, 24 hours. But it must be very low VOC because it has a smell to it, but it's not like an Osmo smell.
Which product are we
the,
talking
the furni- about? Furniture poly- no, furniture finish.
Finish, not just the oil.
No, the correct. Oil. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's tongue oil, safflower oil, and hemp seed, I think, maybe. But it's nice stuff. And it's
super flat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's flat.
Yeah, when you build up the coats, it comes up a little bit, but it's not going to be super glossy at all.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to keep in mind. If you're
even mildly glossy, I would say, is probably, you know, matte.
Yeah, but now you can get it in Lowe's, so it's easy to find.
Oh, nice.
And it's run by somewhere out your way, Mark, I think.
It's made literally 3 miles from here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to go see them.
How does that smell where they're making it?
I don't know. I'm not that close.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
I grew up that far away from a General Mills plant, so I
don't think they're like processing the oils. I think they're bringing in 55-gallon drums and mixing, and then putting into bottles and shipping it back out. So, yeah, it's a pretty small building that they're in. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
Oh, you should pay them a visit. You know,
yeah.
Might need to. Might need to sponsor a podcast or something.
Yeah. We can use some advertising.
Listen to
they got that Lowe's money now.
That's right.
Yeah, they got Lowe's money.
It's like Mark's Honda money. This is Lowe's money now. Other than that, let's see what else. I got a whole lot going on. It's warming up here a little bit. Grass is starting to turn green. I'm going to kind of flip out if I got to start mowing in March. But so it's going to have, I have a tree that has to come down. I'm not 100% sure what species it is. I'm going to have to zap it to see what it is, but I might get some good spoon wood out of that. So.
Oh, there you go.
Probably got like 8 billion seeds getting ready to germinate, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In your golf course garden.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I have, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but the guy that moved in next to me is a bit of an interesting fellow. And I lost count at 25 trees that he cut down. And he's not took out a single stump. So there's stumps everywhere trying to regrow. His solution is to put rocks on them or mulch. So
He's compassing.
Yeah, but he just took
down. I believe you did tell him. At least you told me. I don't know, or the guy, us about his handwork or something.
Yeah,
I remember you telling.
But he just took down a cherry tree, and of course he left it by the curb in chunks, hoping it would just disappear.
Well, how many did you take?
Not yet.
To say if it was my neighbor, that it would have disappeared.
So he and I don't particularly get along, so I might have come by in the middle of the night, just walk the dog and take a good chunk of cherry, get some bowls out of it, maybe. But other than that, not too much. Looking forward to getting. I'm gonna get back into some chairs. I might go see Greg this fall, but I have some plans here that I got from Curtis and Pete and Byrne in Australia. So I think I really want to make new dining room chairs, but that's probably gonna be like a fall winter project.
Mm-hmm. Which model, or is it gonna be an assortment?
Every chair maker's house I've ever been in, every chair around their table has done something different.
Yeah, yep.
You'll have like a continuous arm, you'll have a birdcage. Sack back. So I might go that route.
Yeah. Around my dining room table, it's all the same chair, but it's different iterations of the chair. This is the first iteration. This is the second, third, and fourth,
Yeah. And eventually you'll have a rocker,
So eventually. Yeah.
That'll go in the living room. You can start a whole new collection.
That's right.
There you go.
So that's it. Excuse me. So that's it for me. Sean, how about you?
Not a whole lot. Previously, I mentioned that I was going to be standing outside this past weekend, and I definitely did do that. Came home after a week that it had, was warming, and I tracked it. We left at 7 in the morning. We got home after 6, so it was about an 11-hour day. Some of that was driving, but I was so windburned that it looked like both my wife and I, we looked at each other, and we're like, why are we so warm? I promise you wasn't sun because I didn't see a spot of light. It was all clouds all day.
You still get sunburned through the clouds, my friend.
I know.
Once your body light goes right through those clouds.
I know. It wasn't that. Trust me. It was wind because it was gone like in a day and a half. It all kind of cured itself.
Yeah.
It was straight windburn. And it wasn't like heavy wind. It was just 40 and 10-mile-an-hour wind, which just chills you to the bone. And it took me about an hour after getting home to get the pinch in my side, which was me just tensely standing for most of the day.
You were taking pictures, right?
I got like over 300 pictures of that day. Some of birds and some of lacrosse. How that kind of worked out. Because it's got to be only 100 yards or so away from Lake Erie where we were. And there was a pack of pelicans flying over. There were juvenile eagles flying through. It was really kind of cool to see.
Things you can post.
Yeah, I could. I don't, but I could. I do have some of I have those pictures down on the computer now.
You and Vic, fighting it out for, woodworker slash
photographer.
Yeah.
Oh, it is almost a daily conversation between my wife and I where the next spot we're going to try to find something. I could go on to birding. I don't want to. But that standing through that and then not 3 days later, it was nearly 70 degrees here, and now next weekend it's going to freeze. It's Midwest being Midwest. Just what I'm talking about.
I know it's horrible.
it's not horrible. I've lived in all my life. It is what it is. Yeah. But there are some days I wear the same coat to work all through winter. Some days it's unzipped. Some days it's over my arm. But I have it with me every day just in case. And we're in the Brent, right in the middle of it right now. Right as spring is about to hit,
it'll snow one more time.
It will. We're good for it. I was out. It was Sunday, and I was talking about putting fertilizer on the lawn, and boy, is it nice. My wife was like, "You're being into the falsest of springs. It is not. It is March 3rd, not May 3rd. You have to remember because it was so nice the day after the lacrosse tournament." And it was just remarkably, and it just snaps back. It is what it is. But yeah, not much else going on besides that and work. So Kyle, what are you up to?
Well, I'm in shorts and got the air conditioner set on 72 degrees. So anyway, that's what it's like here. Yeah, it's really been unseasonably warm the last week and a half here or so, and it continues to be. But at this point, winter is over. Spring is in full session, so hopefully we get a long spring, but We'll see. But besides that, been fulfilling orders. I mean, that's what I do these days. Fulfill orders.
That's what I do. I wake up, I fulfill orders.
Orders, yes. I was hoping to get to the rocker to put that second coat of paint on, but no. Got a bunch of orders, and in fact, I am sold out of almost everything. Wow. Which is good. It's good. Yeah. Yeah. So I got to build my inventory back up. So a lot of sales on jigs lately, which has been fantastic. I assume a lot of that's due to this being tax season and people are getting some of those rebate checks in and saying, hey, let me buy something. Then, you know, hey, I'll take the government money. I'm good.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, that's basically what I've been doing. So I've had a lot of orders for my stretcher drilling jig, sold out of my seat drilling guide yesterday. So I got some more components on that. I'm down to 2 spindle drilling guides. So yeah, it's been a whirlwind. So it's great. But I will get that second coat on hopefully next week. We'll see.
Business
we'll
see is how it goes. Booming, right?
Business yeah. is booming. Yeah.
Good. And the new running joke is going to be how long you're letting that first coat cure before applying this.
I think a year is good, you know.
Yeah, I think it'll be finally. It wasn't ready last week. It'll be ready next week.
Uh-huh. What's funny is I did go and visit my mom, took her out for lunch and all that stuff. And she called, say, how's my rocker coming? Well, it's coming.
Oh, it's we'll coming. It's coming, Mom.
But with that, Mark, what are you working on?
Well, my shop has been taken over by a whole bunch of yellow pine flooring or wood that will eventually be flooring.
DIY project?
Well, not for me. I have a student who is building a timber frame shop and he had a whole bunch of yellow pine sawn up down in Arkansas and it's been drying in his shop forever. And he brought it over and we're just working it down and putting tongue and groove on the edges and that sort of thing. So that was going pretty smoothly. And then we've got some rain coming in tomorrow and my forklift has not been working well. So I have it like today, I kind of ripped it apart. So guts are all over the place. And so while it's raining, we have to move the forklift out of the shop to be able to manage with all of this lumber. Mm-hmm. And I can't leave it out in the rain right now. So we're going to take a break until it's sunny again on Saturday. And I don't know if I'll get the forklift fixed by then. It's beating me at every turn. Mm-hmm. So if anybody has an experience with a little dock stalker walk behind forklift, send us a message on the Instagram channel.
Oh, okay. So it's not a ride in forklift.
No, it's a really useful walk behind forklift. So it's got everything works except for the reverse. And
Is it like most forklifts? Is it propane?
No, it's electric. It's all electric. Okay. 12 volt battery. Okay. And today I was pulling the contactors out and working on those and they appear to be contacting and like I've gone through there are basically 2 options left. And one of them is a mystery black box, which is kind of like a voltage regulator, which I have no idea how to check is working or not. And the other is the motor, the drive motor. And when I was checking the voltage, I accidentally got my voltmeter probe inside the contactors while they were closed. And all of a sudden the reverse worked. And and so I don't know, maybe I didn't get the contactors as clean as I thought. Maybe I need to revisit that part. But when I check the voltage, like when I activate them and check the voltage, like the volts are going through. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. There's also a really weird smoke that came out of that little area. But it wasn't the magic smoke from the motor. This was just right at the contactors. This was like plastic melting smoke or something like that.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah, so don't try the aluminum foil fix.
Yeah, no, I think I'm gonna get a file and file the contactors a little bit more and see if getting those cleaned up helps. But yeah, I don't know. I did find a part number for the magic box, the black box, and I found a wiring diagram for it, but it doesn't say what should happen to the voltage at the contacts when you apply voltage to it, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It just says what the thing does. It doesn't say, you know, how the voltage should move through it. So yeah, I don't know. I'm getting to the point where, I had an electrician out here yesterday. He was looking at we had a switch in our house that was like crackling, and, I was getting some really weird readings on the voltmeter. So we called an electrician. I was like, hey, while you're here, would you be interested in looking at a forklift? He's like, I'm not a mechanic. I was like, it's all electric. So he was there when we ripped it apart, and he got me started on the troubleshooting, and, you know, we got it narrowed down to a few things, but the mystery is still not solved. So, I don't know. I may just put it all back together and try to get a forklift guy out here to fix it, because I'm not having any luck.
Well, as long as you don't walk yourself into a corner, you know.
Yeah,
that's right. Just need a bigger shop, well, Mark, that's all.
Yeah, well, I can drive into a corner. I just can't back out.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean, you know.
I can't back into anything right now. It's, yeah.
Go in circles, you know.
It's fine if it's in the shop, the floors are smooth.
Yeah.
And as long as I don't have a load on it, I can pull it backwards and get it rolling. But if I try to get it out of the shop, it goes from concrete to asphalt, and it's just a little too rough to make the thing move without power. And, you know, if I can get it out the door, I can turn really sharp and forward and get it away from the shop and come back around later. But yeah, no, it's just an enormous space suck in the shop right now that doesn't have a whole lot of utility. Well, that's my fun. How about you, Garrett?
Me? Well, I mean, right now I'm stuck in Kentucky, so I'm not doing much of anything. But during the time that I was working on the Red Oak project, I had a lot of friend projects building up and home projects building up. So I just finished a hall table with a matching mirror, and then I had to move on to a countertop that I promised a friend of ours 8 months ago. So I'm finally doing that, and it should be pretty cool. Actually, it's an island top for a kitchen, and I got two really big spalted maple slabs that, I actually ended up cutting down to about 12-inch wide boards. It's about 2 inches, about a little under 8/4. And the friend of ours actually didn't want live edge at all. She just wanted the spalted maple look. Mm-hmm. So right now that's what I'm working on. I've got 4 boards sitting on my bench in my shop at home waiting for me to get home. And I mean, it should be pretty straightforward. Just, it's about a little under 8 feet by 3 feet, just a, you know, a bar top basically. So yeah, that's about it really.
Cool.
On to the next thing at some point in time.
What do you plan to finish that with?
Probably Odie's oil.
Okay.
I actually have, before I really got into woodworking, I always liked the look of a butcher block top, on our island in our kitchen in my home. And I actually had no clue what I was doing at the time. And I think I saw Odie's oil just on Instagram or something. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, that looks cool. And it's actually held up really well, you know, mm-hmm. for a family of 4 and, you know, spilling stuff on it and kids drawing, you know, getting permanent marker on it. And I've only had to refinish it once, and I think that was because of the permanent marker. but yeah, it worked. It holds up shockingly well. And she wants a natural finish, you know, so she can, you know, get any kind of food or anything like that on there. So yeah, that's probably what I'll go with.
Interesting. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, before I dig into this big commission that you did, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you grew up and how you got into woodworking?
Yeah. So I grew up in a little town in Michigan that, you know, maybe one person out of a million has heard of. It's about 45 minutes northeast of Flint.
Okay, let's see if Sean's heard of it.
Hit me. Yeah, try me. I'm not that good, but.
Otisville, Michigan.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. I know Flint. You got me with Flint, and
you gotta do the hand thing, Garrett.
Yeah. No, I know roughly where on the hand that is.
So it's like there-ish.
Yeah,
that makes good podcast, right?
That's good. It's great audio. Yeah.
It's there on the hand. Yeah, right there.
It's there on the hand.
So yeah, no, I mean that's where I grew up. Just farm country, you know, nothing too exciting, pretty typical Midwest farm country upbringing. But yeah, as far as getting into woodworking, I guess the thing I wanted to say is more how I got into making originally, just to kind of show some love to my mom, who passed away some time ago now, but she taught me how to sew when I was 8, and I kind of fell in love with this idea that you could take this, just a roll of material that was nothing, and turn it into clothes. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she taught me, I think I made a pair of shorts when I was maybe 9, and I just thought that was the coolest thing. But as far as woodworking goes, you know, it was about probably 9 years ago. It was right before my son was born. I'm a drummer, and I've never been able to afford like a really high-end, cool drum set. And I remember looking online and seeing all these and being like, you know, you can just buy the wood shell, and then I could figure out how to put veneer on it. And so I found this website where this guy teaches you how to veneer drum shells, and it really wasn't that hard. It was Elmer's glue and an iron. I was like, I bet I could do that, you know? So I bought some drum shells for, you know, a few $100, and I bought a Tamo Ash veneer from, you know, veneer supplies. And this is all new to me. I had no clue what I was doing. And this veneer was gorgeous. And I ended up making this 3-piece drum set, and the veneering was really cool. I ended up finishing it with a Danish oil, and you know, I remember like sanding it and kind of going through the finishing process, and I was like, ah, this is kind of neat, you know, and it came out beautiful. So I didn't really do much after that for a year or two. And then we had our floors all redone, and we had half of our house is hardwood floors and the other half was carpet. So we had the rest of the house done in matching hardwood, but I had to empty out all the closets and everything. So that when it came time to put the closets back in, our master closet was just a bunch of junky stuff from the previous owner, wire shelves and things. And I just kind of was like, I'm going to make a closet, you know, like I'm going to get some wood and I'm going to make a cool looking closet like you see on TV. And that's really what hooked me. You know, I ended up going to a lumber supplier about an hour from where I live in Howell. And they, you know, they'll do the S4S for you and all that kind of stuff. And I just ended up getting all this gorgeous cherry. And I honestly put the whole thing together with just glue and pocket screws. Mm-hmm. But it really came out really nice,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I finished it, I think, in the same like Danish oil or whatever that I used on the drum set. And it's still there. It still works perfectly. And it's aged really nice. And I mean, it's just beautiful. But that really got me hooked on it. I was like, man, I can't believe I just made this thing, you know, out of these boards. And, you know, I was able to do some metal work. Cause I was really into like metal fabrication in my early 20s. So I made like custom brackets and all this kind of stuff. And that really kind of got me moving. You know, after that, I think about 2 years later, I ended up doing just a simple walnut table for a friend of mine for their RV, for their camper. And I remember that was when I bought my first two tools. I got that Bosch job site saw, and because I had to rip the boards, you know, to width. And then I got the whole thing finished, and I had to cut the shape. And I had this just terrible old Craftsman router that was like, I think my grandfather's, that I got from my dad. And it had, I can't even tell you how dull of a bit was in it.
It's burned your way through it.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I still had no, you know, I knew how to glue things together and sand them. It was about as big as I got. And I remember I was coming around. I didn't know anything about grain or direction.
Oh boy.
And
walnut.
And
too.
Yeah, and it looked gorgeous. And I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I got a pattern, you know, pattern bit. And I was like following the old table around. And I caught the grain just right. And I just ripped a huge chunk, like right off the side. And I was like, oh, come on, you know. But I did learn how to fix it.
You knew how to glue stuff, right?
Yeah. And the thing is I was looking at it and I was like, you know, if I just kind of sandwich this back together with some glue, I bet you'll never even see it.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, I glued it back together. Because honestly, not to get off track really quick, but the one thing that always kind of scared me when I was doing metal stuff about doing woodworking is, what do you do if you screw up? You know, metalworking, I can just fill it with weld and grind right. it, and you never see it. Woodworking, I always thought, if I screw that up, well, that whole thing is garbage. I got to start over again. But then doing that table, when I glued that back together and I saw that I could fix it and you couldn't tell, I was like, oh my God, okay. Like I can do this. Because I don't have to be so scared of screwing up. But to finish that story, so when I did that, though, I was like, well, I'm never using this router again. It's the router's fault. Right? Uh-huh. It's not my fault.
Uh-huh. How could it be?
It's not my fault. I know everything, right? But I bought, you know, I think the router that everybody buys, the Bosch, whatever it is, the 21 something with the wood.
Yeah, handle. And the plunge base and the standard base. Yeah. I have that myself, yes.
Yeah, I still have one. So I bought that. I bought a nice bit, and I went through and I redid that cut, and it was, you know, it's nice and silky smooth. And that was probably the official start of everything. Because after that, it was the fun of making it, but it was also the fun of delivering it. Like when I gave them the table, they were blown away. And I mean, it was the most simple, just rectangular RV table, you know, but you would have thought I made them, I don't know, a whole room of furniture or something. But, and it's just that satisfaction I got from making it, but also supplying these people with a neat, you know, something they needed and they were so happy with. And after that, I was like, I'm sold. This is what I'm doing, you know, every possible minute of the day for the rest of my life.
Well, fantastic. Well, I guess that's when you started HMR Custom Woodcraft. So tell us a little bit about your company.
Yeah. I started HMR, I guess it was probably about a year and a half after that. I had gotten a few more tools, and I bought a camper, funny enough. And the camper had this horrible little plastic cover for the sink. And the sink is just this round, you know, RV sink. And I'm looking at this cover thing and I'm like, I'm going to make a cutting board that looks just like this. And that way it'll sit over the sink and I can use it for other stuff. So I made the cutting board and I put it up on a Facebook group of people with the same camper that we had. And overnight, I kid you not, I put up the picture and overnight I had 22 DMs saying, can you make me one of those?
Nice.
Nice.
And I had no clue what I was getting myself into. Let's start with that. And I said, sure. And I put a post up on that group and I said, I'll make these for everybody for $50, $50 each.
No.
I ended up making, I think, six of them. It took forever and it took so much wood.
Did you get a volume deal on the wood though? Because you had that many.
No,
because half of them were maple and then there's walnut. Some are the oak. Or
it was everything I had laying in my shop, plus probably another, I don't know, couple hundred dollars in whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, and they were round too. So yeah, only I had to cut them in a circle, but I also had to rabbit a lip so they sat in the sink. So it was like a project. But I did them all. Everybody loved them. And as soon as a couple people got them, I got emails saying, can you make a matching table? And once again, I was like, yep, I'll do that. I'll make a matching table. Then my brain thought, somebody could sit on this table or something and have it break and I could get sued. So I talked to a buddy of mine who's a lawyer and he's like, you need to start an LLC. Yep. So you need to pick a business name. So I threw around a bunch of ideas that were all horrible. And HMR is just my kid's initials, right? Nice. So Harlow and Miles Roberson. And I had a nice ring to it. So I started the LLC. I made, I think, four RV tables. I have no idea if any of them are still in use. But no one called me and said they were broken. So I guess they worked out okay.
There you go.
Did you get insurance to go with the LLC or just the LLC?
No, No, I didn't get insurance. I probably should have, but you know, I guess I basically wanted to make sure if I got sued, they couldn't take me for everything. They could just take my wood shop, which at the time was still not very much. So
yeah, just a okay. Router and a table saw.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't a lot at the time. But yeah, no, it was funny because those tables are so overbuilt. I actually put breadboard ends on them and then I did draw boring and these things were 3 feet by 28 inches. I mean, just these tiny little tables.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure they'd always be good, you know? So I just overbuilt the crap out of them. It was pretty hilarious.
Yep. Exactly. And so when did you invest in the CNC to make these stuff?
Never.
Oh man, that is an interesting story. Oh, how much would you charge for one of the little sink covers now?
$500.
There you go.
There it is.
You know, and it's funny because every once in a while I'll get a DM on Facebook because I'm still have the camper and I'm still in that group.
Yeah.
And somebody will put a picture and someone will see the sink insert and, oh, where'd you get that? Oh, message this guy. And they'll message me. And I always say like $150. And I always get, oh, you're crazy. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll never make one of those again. So
Yep.
If you want to pay me $150, I'll make one. But other than that, forget it.
Seems like a fair price for the amount of time that goes into it.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think people know the original price was 50, so then they get a lot.
Oh, that is mad. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
just tell them that guy went out of business.
Yeah.
There's a new now.
Yeah.
Well, so, let's pivot because let's go from that to this Mansion Red Oak project that you did. So tell us a little bit about that. I kind of followed a little bit on it on Instagram, but for our listeners, tell us how this all came to be and what came out of it.
Yeah. So, like I said, I live in Howell, Michigan, which is, for those familiar, it's about a half hour north of Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of like a lot of old towns, there's always like the first family. Mm-hmm. And the first family of Howell was this family, the McPherson. And they kind of owned everything and had all this money. I'm not really sure what the guy did, but either way, there's this house, the McPherson Mansion, and kind of right in downtown Howell. And it had just this massive red oak in front of it. I mean, you know, I drove by it 100 times and it's just, you know, huge. And back in, I want to say November or October of 2021, we had just a crazy windstorm come through mid-Michigan. I mean, 60, 80 mile an hour gusts, just crazy. And about a week later, I was driving through town on my way to work because I work in Howell as well. And it was down. It was uprooted and just laying on its side. And I was like, oh, huh, you know, that's an interesting tree, I guess. So I drove by it for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and it just never moved. So finally, having never built a real piece of furniture in my life, I email just info@McPherson Mansion, because now it's owned by a law firm and it's all business, it's all offices. And I just said, hey, I'm a furniture maker in Howell. I'd love to make something out of that tree to kind of commemorate, you know, its life in front of this building that's been here since 1912. And I got about a month of just nothing. So, but the tree was still there, you know, so I didn't know what was going on. And then the owner called me a few days after Christmas and just said, if you can be up here by 2:00, we'll talk about making furniture out of this tree. So I go up there, we walk around, we look at the tree. I hustle together a bunch of just Google images of ideas of what I could, you know, possibly do. And he takes me into this room that was the Taft room. I guess President Taft had dinner there years ago, and they had a picture of it, right? They had a picture of him sitting there eating dinner. And he said, what would you think about doing like a whole room of furniture out of that tree? Is there enough wood there for that? And I said, sure. I mean, I honestly had no idea. And I'm like, yes.
Maybe.
Yes, there is. But I mean, I think it's easily 3,500 board feet out of that tree now. But either way, I just said yes. Once again, I had no real clue what I was doing, but I'm like, I'm throwing myself, you know, out there. And he said, okay, write up a quote. You know, we want a conference table. We want a big cabinet and, you know, maybe just a little side, you know, just some kind of thing like a plant stand or, you know, something else. So I spent a few weeks designing this live edge table and all of this kind of more craftsman style, very simple furniture. And I come in, I present everything, and the wife hates all of it. She's like, and she just kept saying it's not fancy enough. And, you know, and I, at the time, I'm not like a professional furniture maker at the time. You know, I'm just like, I'm fancy. I come up with six or seven different designs. She doesn't like any of them. And she hires an interior designer, and the interior designer gets a hold of me and sends me all these, you know, images of all this painted Art Deco, super round Roaring 20s stuff. And I'm just looking at it like, this is red oak. You know, what am I supposed to do? And I'm not painting anything. Like, this is crazy. So long story short, I end up designing this 10-foot by 4-foot conference room table with a live edge to the middle. And I ended up doing stave legs. So there's four semicircles that make up the legs. And then I did this just enormous Beaufront buffet, which was just absolutely the most insane thing I've ever made. And they really loved it. So once I had no idea how I was going to make any of it. I had never done bent laminations. I had never done casework. I had never made a table. I had never done stave anything. I'd never built a drawer. I'd really never done any of it. But I knew if I can design it, I can figure out how to make it. And that was really, that was kind of the beginning of it all. And it ended up, I ended up basically managing the whole project after that. So we had to remove the tree. I found a local sawyer who I've actually worked with quite a bit since then. He, you know, removed the tree, milled everything. And then we had to let it air dry. So that we did the final milling in April of 22. We had to let it air dry until Labor Day. The first batch went into the kiln Labor Day weekend. And then I started getting lumber in October of 2022. So basically a year from when the tree came down is when I actually got the first shipment of lumber to start making something. And then basically from that point on, I spent the entire, pretty much almost, well, almost all of 2023 was consumed in making this furniture. And I mean, it was an adventure, you know?
Well, it came out really well. I encourage the listeners to go to your Instagram and go Thank back you. And look at it. But that Beaufront, I mean, out of red oak, I mean, you know, the thing with red oak is the grain is so defined, especially cathedrals and stuff. But you did a wonderful job at combining the aspects of that. And I can really see that you let the grain dictate how this was going to look. And that is.
Yeah, thank you. I think the one thing that I really lucked out on was how big the tree was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we figured out the tree was about well over 150 years old. But the widest slabs that we got from the bole or the trunk were about 42 inches wide. So the nice thing is if you look at like the three bottom drawers on either side of the buffet, that's all one slab piece.
Yeah.
So the grain starts and just follows it all the way down because I was able to take it and, you know, saw the pieces and then resaw the veneer and then make it so it was continuous all the way down.
Yeah, that's what's fantastic about it is, yeah, you really paid attention to the grain and how that looks. And it's a wonderful piece. It's absolutely wonderful. Now, it's all now where it curves around, it's all bent lamination there.
Yeah, yeah. So like I said, I had never done a bent lamination. I'd never resawed anything. But I every single ply is the red oak from the tree. So I probably spent, 100 hours resawing and drum standing, cause I'd resaw to about 3/16 ish. And then I had to drum sand down to about a 16th in order to make, cause it's about 88 degrees, that wrap of the drawer front.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a sharp curve. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in order to do that and make them be 3/4 inches thick, I had, you know, I don't know, probably 12 plies on each drawer. And that's not taking into account the 3 that I screwed up while I was learning how to do bent lamination.
Sure.
Of course, yes.
Well, and that's why it was so heartbreaking when they would screw up, is because it was so much time resawing and sanding.
Right.
That when I would screw up one drawer front, it was a whole week of work for one drawer front was a week,
mm-hmm.
you know, with having a full-time job, right? I would do it at nights and weekends. So yeah, every drawer front was a week. So if I screwed up the drawer front, I knew I had a whole other week of work ahead of me to replace it. I mean, it was nice that I never had to worry about running out of lumber because I had more than I would ever dream to do with. But yeah, it was just crazy.
Well, this tree is just amazing. The grain is so tight for red oak, and yeah.
It's, I mean, there's really, I still have a lot of it left, and there's just some really just, I mean, beautiful pieces. Like
mm-hmm.
I'm saving them for, I don't even know what, but they're so pretty, that, you know, they deserve to be used on something special.
Let me introduce you to stick chairs.
Well,
and post and rung construction.
Well, and that's the funny thing is I probably have, I don't know, 600 board feet of air dried red oak in my backyard that would be perfect for something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if anybody needs any, let me know, because I'm never going to use it all.
Let's bid some chairs to the owners of the mansion.
Mm-hmm. I tried that. I tried to get them on a like a Windsor bench.
Yeah.
And they just, I don't know, they didn't want anything that was like traditional looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted it to be very curvy and swoopy and elegant and, you know, stuff like that. So they were not hip to any kind of stick chair or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
I wonder what they would think of the Hyperion.
They'd probably love the Hyperion, yeah.
Ooh, you could do the Hyperion.
You could
do the bent lamb and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to message Shinobi. I talk to him a lot. I'll have to holler at him.
So on the bent lamb, so how did you do this? I assume we're using a vacuum press?
Yeah, I did, you know, pretty normal process. Just made the form out of MDF and then just vacuum bag and, you know, urea, resin, glue.
Oh,
was that hard to work with?
No, it was actually, so the first one I did, so I have a good friend of mine who's a literal pro, this guy, Nate Graham, and he does a ton of veneer work and a ton of like bent lamb stuff. And he gave me a little bit of, I can't remember the company now, but that does like the urea resin type of glue that everyone seems to use. Unibond. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did use some of that, but he just gave me like a cap full. So I ended up getting that water-based stuff from Joe Woodworker, and that's what I used for the whole thing. You know, mm-hmm. the powder with the water and the UltraCat, and it's great. That's what I used on all those drawers, is just the UltraCat powder.
Well, it's probably a lot more safer for you too, as far as.
Yeah, I mean, in
a respirator and all that kind of stuff with the because I think the Unibond's fairly toxic stuff.
Yeah,
I don't.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I still wore a respirator just because if you.
Oh, I would too.
It,
yeah.
You know, it would pop out everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was very simple to work with. You know, they give you very specific directions on measurement. I didn't follow those at all, and it still worked great. I just started to figure out it needs to be a consistency that looks like this. And when it would get to that consistency, I'd be like, great, use it. And it was always worked perfect.
Well, fantastic. Well, that is some beautiful stuff. And I recommend our listeners to go out there and look at it because, yeah, this is not your typical red oak type stuff. This is, like you said, 150-year-old tree. And that's just gorgeous stuff. Just absolutely gorgeous stuff. And and how you did that to, you know, accentuate the grain patterns. I love what you did on the doors and stuff
matching.
Like that. Yep.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Yeah. Very nice.
Thank you.
Done.
Yeah. The door was actually the first thing I thought of is I remember thinking I'm going to find the weirdest piece to come out of all this lumber and I want to make some kind of, you know, book matched door insert that really is like the focal point of the whole thing. So when I got that funky, weird crotch piece, I was like, that's perfect. Well, you know, it's funny, when I was doing this mansion project, I'd never quoted anything before.
Yeah.
I did those cutting boards, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm staring at these designs of all this furniture. And once again, that guy, Nate, I just called him and I was, he's an older guy. I mean, I'm 43. He's probably 60. And I just said, how the hell do I quote this? Like, I don't know how much to charge for this stuff, you know? And he basically just said, like, pick a number that if they say yes, it'll be absolutely worth all the time and kind of suffering, you know, and whatever that number is, just make that the number. And if they say yes, great. And if they say no, then maybe you're just never meant to do it. And, you know,
hard lesson.
And, it wasn't an astronomical number, but it was a pretty big number.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, and they said yes. And I was like, you know, I remember calling him and telling him, and he was like, yeah, that sounds about right. You know, so I remember him saying he probably would have charged a little more, but I'll
send you the invoice.
Right.
I thought he was going to say, you know, pick a number that you think would be worth the time and the frustration and double it and then give him that number.
Well, I don't know.
You didn't know how much time and frustration it was going to be.
No. Oh my God. I mean, if I thought that there was like no limit on a budget, I would have charged so much more. You know, just with all of the, I mean, I don't think I really ever understood the term blood, sweat, and tears until I made this project. Because, I mean, there was literal all three. You know, there were times like I shoved a chisel through my finger and just bled everywhere. The first time I screwed up a drawer front, like to the point where I knew I couldn't use it again, I burst into tears because it was like, it was one of the first ones I made. It probably took me 2 weeks and I was like so happy and I was like, oh, here we go. And I remember fitting it up and I made like one wrong cut that I knew I could not fix. And I literally like, I threw it across the shop and just
about to say, at least a
ceremonial flight. Yeah.
Yep. And I just sobbed. And so, I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for the world, though, is the funny thing. Like, it was, I look back and I'm like, I'd do it all again in a heartbeat. I'd do it easier.
Yeah.
Because I learned a million. Like,
That's the biggest thing is you've actually learned what you're doing as far as those big projects. So, yeah, the next one comes down the road, you're much better equipped to say.
Well, and now I know what bendy ply is.
Oh, yeah.
Because I resawed all of those veneers, hundreds of sheets of veneer, and sanded them just to make these bent laminations that I then covered in veneer and capped in hardwood. So you can't see any of it. I could have done the whole thing in bendy ply, put one veneer on the top and been done. It would have taken me a week, you know? Yeah. So
you could have just bought veneers and bent them, you know, without sanding them out of the oak.
Yeah. Then it wouldn't be out of that oak. So, yeah.
Well,
but I mean, that is the thing. Everything aside from the drawer boxes and bottoms are made from that tree.
Yeah. And that's part of the romance of the project.
Yeah. For sure.
And that's part of your aesthetic that, you know, no one will see this, but you know how it was made. Yeah. Someday in the future, maybe someone will recognize, wait a minute, he could have used bendy ply, but he did.
We overpaid.
Right. No, it's one thing I forgot to mention, just because I did think it was funny, and I actually it was the first thing I did that I was kind of proud of with it, was when I was making the case. I had shapes cut at like a water jet place of just some Luan, just so I'd have like a reference for like the curve of the front and everything. And I made the base first. The base is a whole separate piece. So I made the base first and then I built the case to sit on it. And I made the mistake of making the case the exact size of the base, but I wanted like a 1-inch lip. You know, I wanted everything to set in. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I did it. I dovetailed everything, you know, the case sides I dovetailed, and I did sliding dovetails for the dividers, and everything was glued up and done. and I sat it on the base, and I was like, oh my God, it's the same size. I was like, I have to remake this entire case to be smaller. But then I realized that I could actually cut it down the middle and then cut 3/8 of an inch off each side of the middle and then put it back together, because you're never going to see it.
Right.
Because there's a different top, there's a bottom.
Yeah.
And then there's drawers and doors. And at the same time, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to hide this mistake. So if you know, the listeners and you guys go back way back and you look when I met the case back together, I actually got Paduke, and I made Paduke dovetail inlays on the top and the bottom where the seam is, where the case met back together. So it draws your eye to the seam and makes you say, like, why is there this seam in this, you know, in these boards that looked like they should not have ever been cut in half, but were cut in half. And I don't know, just something about that. Once I was like, I'm not going to hide this mistake. Like, I'm just going to draw attention to it. I'm going to put these crazy bright red dovetails, you know, inlays into this. And, you know, I've always liked it. Once again, like the juxtaposition of it, you know, you open the doors and it's like, what is that all about? You know,
they're like, didn't we give this guy a whole tree?
Right. Yeah, I could have remade it, but I was like, no way. Because I did half blind dovetails for the case sides and stuff. And I was like, I'm not redoing all that.
You know? No.
And I'd never done any of that before either. So I'm like, I pulled it off. I'm not going to try to pull it off again.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back to that, but I remember seeing those bow ties that you made.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be way back, but
yeah.
But yeah.
I think I'm almost to it. December of 22, I'm looking at half of a case.
Yep, that's it.
I'm working my way. I went past. I got to come back to it.
Yeah, well, that's just absolutely incredible.
Well done.
Thank
you.
Yeah. Now, the table, so the pedestals for the table, are they... they're metal, but they're wrapped in wood.
Well, so all the steel work
is
really just the kind of internal structure.
Structure.
So the coopered legs are on the floor. They actually are supporting the table. And then the steel framework is bolted to the legs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to do the apron out of wood, but I also knew that I could build it out of steel, and I could do all 1-inch and 3-inch tube, and it would take a 1/16th of the amount of time. And it would be incredibly rigid to keep those slabs flat and do over time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if I had 25 years experience in furniture making, I could have done it all out of wood, but I knew if I do this out of steel, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
So that's why the whole kind of apron and internal structure is steel, just more of a comfort level for me. And then just a longevity, you know, I knew it would last if I did it that way, mm-hmm. sort of thing. But the whole thing does sit on the coopered legs. Those are, you know, that's still the main, you know, support of the table.
I think the little decorative detail between the two slabs that you welded in is really nice too. I think it's a nice kind of thing that someone can discover when they're sitting at the table.
Yeah, the architectural, like,
yeah, element. Just a little sweeping pieces of, like, what is that, 1/4-inch diameter rod?
Yeah, it's just quarter round.
Yeah
I wanted that, you know, like, I know I'm not some cool designer guy, but I've always loved juxtaposition of things, right? I love, like, an ugly outside and a beautiful inside, or you know, bright colors and then black. And when I was making the table, when I was doing those legs, I was like, it's not enough to just make this steel frame and bolt legs to it. I want to put all these little architectural elements on the inside that you can't see unless you go looking. And when you go looking, you'll find them and be like, oh, look at that. You know, like, I wasn't expecting that at all.
Nice.
And then, like, with the center drawer of the buffet, it's actually book matched walnut, you know, which I mean, no one's ever going to look in the inside of that drawer, but the one person that does, to me, it's so cool that they'll open that drawer and be like, holy cow, look at the bottom of this drawer. It's like this book matched walnut crotch, you know? So I've always loved stuff like that when it's, you know, this complete opposite coming together.
Yeah. Well, I'll disagree with you. I think you are that designer guy. So anyway.
You may not have been before, but you are now.
You are now.
Yeah. Proven through your experience, you are actually designer guy.
Exactly. Well, and speaking of that. Yeah, well, not a problem. Well, speaking of that, what kind of designs and stuff influence your work?
You know, I think if you looked at those furniture pieces, you would probably be way off the mark of what I actually like.
Mm-hmm.
I loved making those, but I would never put those like in my home. That's just not when I think of what I want to see.
Yeah,
it's not that. You know, I like very minimalist, very you know, studio furniture, early studio furniture type stuff. You know, I really love like what Phil Morley does. You know, Michael Jury. I just really like the very understated, very clean. But then to what I said earlier, I love some kind of juxtaposition of style or color or just something that kind of you aren't expecting. You know, like I've always been a big car guy my whole life. And way back in my younger days, I had a show car. You know, it was this Volkswagen Golf, and the outside.
I have one of those.
Yeah,
I used to have two of those. I only have one.
No, mine was a Rabbit. I had an '81 Rabbit.
Well, oh, that's a Golf before they started calling them Golfs, anyway.
Right.
So this was a '94 Volkswagen Golf, and I mean, I spent way too much money for a 22-year-old person to spend on a $4,000 Volkswagen Golf. But, yeah, exactly. But the outside was all satin black. It was very understated, and I smoothed everything, right? So I shaved all the emblems. I shaved everything off of it. It was very smooth, satin black. But then the inside was like a Burberry plaid interior.
Wow.
Like very just, you know, kind of in your face, loud. And I really loved how that looked. And that's kind of been what turns me on ever since. You know, I want either a bold outside and a subdued inside, or a you know, subdued outside and just a crazy interior. And so, yeah, just when I go about designing anything, I always want there to be some kind of, it's understated until you go looking.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That is cool. Yeah. So you're the guy that likes the plain blue jacket, but the lining's got to be just wild.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you use that as an example. If you guys remember that movie Boomerang with Eddie Murphy,
yep.
Where his dad, yeah. Where that guy's dad had the mushroom on the inside of his coat and the mushroom belt,
yeah,
and all that. I remember seeing that when I was, I don't know, probably what, like 13 or 14 or whenever that movie came out. And I just remember seeing that like light brown suit, and then it's got the mushrooms on the inside. And I was like, that's cool looking, you know? And I love like paisley. Paisley is probably my favorite fabric, you know, all okay. These years. My mom, you know, was a seamstress and a mm-hmm. maker. And I remember she always had some kind of crazy fabric. And I love seeing somebody that has like a, yeah, like you said, like a navy blue suit. And then you open up the inside of the suit and it's like this crazy multicolored paisley,
yep.
You know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, that's it right there. Like that's what I love.
That's so cool.
So how do you market your furniture and find customers? Now, do you just wait for trees to blow down and then, you know,
you know,
Paul's, Paul's Reed Timmer around the country.
Oh my God.
Chaser.
I will say,
yeah, I say next storm to blow something down.
Yeah. The storm chaser / woodworker, yes.
Right. Yeah, no, the local paper did two articles on this whole project that I did.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, it was pretty neat. But here's the problem is I get calls every week. Hey, I had this tree down. Do you want the lumber? Can you uh-huh. come get this tree? I got this tree. Can you come get this tree out of my yard? And I'm like, oh my, you guys are missing the point. I don't want the tree.
Yeah.
I will make something cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I don't have
out of the tree.
Yeah. I don't have the equipment to recover your fallen tree.
No.
I have made things from fallen trees though. Yeah. So
far do you how far is Matt Cremona from you, you know?
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Definitely across the Lake Michigan and a few states away. So
okay.
Yes.
Not easy.
Yeah. But no, as far as like marketing to customers, I don't. You know, the couple jobs I've done since then have just been word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not my full-time job. So, right. You know, I'd love to have it be that. But I also need to be very selective. You know, I've had a lot of calls about, can you make me build, you know, a built-in, or can you do kitchen cabinets, or,
yeah,
you know, which I don't want to do. So, you know, yeah, it's nice to be selective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to take any of it. But yeah, I left business cards at the mansion. That's about as much advertising as I've ever done. So,
well, cool. Well, you know, it's going to work for you. Exactly. Looking at that furniture, especially, you know, what people can see there. And, you know, if you need a cutting board sink, I know the guy for you. So anyway,
be prepared.
Yeah, I'm starting next month. Making a front entryway desk for the same customer for the mansion.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah, out of the red oak.
Now, you could do the whole Michael Fortune thing where he just has a few select customers that he ends up building their entire house full of furniture for that are extremely wealthy. So that works too. Yeah.
I mean, I would love that. And the couple that own the house that own the law firm are very well off. So
yes.
I would not be mad at if I was like their furniture maker for the rest of my life. That would be fine.
Exactly. The staff furniture maker.
Yep.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's a cool design though. I'm doing like a waterfall edge with like a raised kind of bar top for guests to write, like sign the guest book. Mm-hmm. And then I'm actually going to do some like decorative brass inlays in the crest, the McPherson family crest, kind of on the front of the desk where it would like hide your legs. So I'll be starting that probably like mid-April. So that should be pretty cool.
That's wow. Fantastic. Well, I can't wait to follow along.
As I say, subscribe and follow along.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Should be a good one.
You'll have to listen to the end to find out where to subscribe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to move on to what are your favorite construction techniques so far that you've done. I mean, we've talked a lot about bent lamination and stuff like that, but what do you really like doing as far as some of your go-tos?
I mean, being relatively new, I don't have, I would say, a lot of go-tos, but one thing I love, and I really can't even explain why, is a sliding dovetail.
Ooh.
Something about sliding dovetails, I just love them. And I will use them for everything if I can. I don't know what it is, but like I made this bench. So, you know, I made something you can sit on. So I'm allowed to be on your show.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Is that a new requirement?
Yeah. Right.
Your chair maker adjacent. Yes.
Yes. But I can't remember who was on your show that did those Amana church pews.
Jamil?
Jamil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I looked those up when I listened to that episode. And they have that sliding dovetail that kind of supports the seat. Right. And then the legs and stuff go into the sliding dovetail. And I was like, that is the coolest thing. So I actually made a bench for my cousin out of wood from my grandfather's farm before they got rid of the farm after he passed away. It's actually made from like siding from the barn. So it's pine from, I don't even know how long ago, 100 years probably or something. But yeah. I just was like, it's got sliding dovetails and it's something you can sit on. Like it's the coolest. So yeah, I love sliding dovetails. I love dovetail inlays. I'll put those in anything if I can. But yeah, I'd say those are probably the two things I enjoy the most, I guess.
Cool. Well, cool. Well, I was going to ask you about your finishing process. So what did you use for these tables that are other, I'm sorry, the Red Oak Mission mansion project that you did?
Yeah. So like everything else, I was learning as I went. So they wanted it stained. They wanted kind of like a traditional red oak brown, I guess you would call it. And I had no clue how to do that. So I bought a ton of powdered dyes from the Tools for Working Wood site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I tried alcohol based, I tried oil based, I tried water based. None of it worked for me because I didn't know what I was doing. And then I had a buddy in the local woodworkers guild, and he was just like, you know, my floors were all finished in this Odie's oil mixed with their pigment. And he's like, it's awesome. So I bought a little thing of super dark Odie's oil and a little thing of Buffalo Brown powder. And it was totally just the easiest thing ever. Just a couple scoops of powder, a few scoops of oil, mix it together, slather it around, let it sit for 10 minutes and wipe it off. Done. And it looked perfect.
Awesome.
So that's what I used.
And then interesting.
Yeah. It was so easy. I mean, a child could do it. There was nothing to it.
I thought you were going to say, just go get some Minwax fruit wood and put it on there.
Yeah, no, not that simple. Nothing available.
No, no, that is cool. I haven't heard about that before. So, yeah.
I haven't either.
Yeah. I want to check that out.
Odie's oil, I've heard of. It's expensive.
Yeah, I've heard of Odie's oil, but I hadn't heard about the powder you mentioned.
Yeah, but put a pigment powder in it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it was very easy and very very durable once it was cured. And then I just did kind of a coat of furniture wax over everything.
Right.
You know, and it looks, I mean, it really does look great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, tell us about the one thing you wish you had known when starting out, because sounds like you can relate to that question a little bit.
A little bit.
You have a recent experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably, you know, that everything is going to take a lot longer than you think it should.
Yes.
And it's okay to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was making those drawer fronts, the one thing I could not figure out how to do was to connect the drawer front to the drawer box. And I spent weeks trying to figure out, I was using my Panarouter, I was using jigs, I could not figure out how to mount this insanely curved thing to this square box, you know, this rectangular box. And, you know, I know I've mentioned him a few times already, but I finally called that Nate guy after I literally laid on the couch for a whole day over Christmas break, and I was supposed to be working and I just couldn't work. I stopped working. I gave up, you know. I laid on the couch for a whole day and just like, I can't do anything. And finally I texted him and I just said, hey, this is what I got going on. And he just said, look, I'm driving by your house tomorrow to go to a job site. I'll stop by. Let's look at it. And, you know, just, he came in, he spent 2 hours with me in the shop and we figured out a solution. And he, you know, he told me, he was like, nope, none of us knew what we were doing when we started, man. Like you gotta tell somebody that you're struggling. You gotta ask for help. You know, it's okay. He's like, I'll always help anybody, you know, that's a furniture maker or a pro, you know, if they're obviously like a person who's willing to help, will help you if you're struggling with this stuff. And that was something I waited way too long to reach out, you know, and ask for help.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, you know, and, you know, I think that's something that's great about our community too, because I see a lot of people and probably not taking advantage of it as much as I would think, but I do see a lot of people out there that will say, hey, I'm having trouble with this. Any suggestions? And they'll just get, they'll get flooded with suggestions or stuff like that. And usually within a couple of hours, I will see them make another post going, thanks so much to so-and-so. Da, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Great part about the Instagram community.
Yeah.
For sure.
Reddit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's fantastic. Well, so tell us a little bit about your shop. So we've mentioned you have the Grizzly table saw and you got some vacuum bags and vacuum equipment. And so what else you got in the shop?
Well, so my shop is in the basement. Like I know a few people do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky enough to live on a hill. So my basement ceilings are 11 feet to the joist.
Oh, wow.
So it makes it a really comfortable place to work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's pretty typical. You know, I have a mini max joiner planer combo, the 12 inch joiner planer combo, which I love.
Oh, that's nice. Nice. Yeah.
Getting it into the basement, I did not love. I took it all apart thinking, well, the cylinder on, you know, that supports the planer bed is all that's really left in there. Yeah, I didn't know that was solid steel. So, even without the tables and everything, that thing probably still weighed 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun. But the thing I like the most about my shop right now, at least, is just that with those high ceilings, I was able to raise the floor. So all my electrical and dust collection goes under the floor. Like it's all plywood.
Oh cool. Wow.
You have a floating floor kind of thing with ductwork underneath. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's when you're in that, it's a really small shop. It's, you know, footprint wise, it's only 16 by 18. And not having anything in the coming down from the ceiling or anything like that, having everything in the floor really just makes it feel so much bigger and open. You know, I don't think I'd ever not do that. Even if I built a new shop, I think I would probably bury it in the ground just so I could float the floor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, one thing probably I did recently that, you know, I've seen people do and some people not do is I got rid of my miter saw. You know, you spend, I think I probably spent 600-700 hours on that mansion project. If you spend that much time in your shop, you really figure out what you use and what you don't use.
Right.
Sure.
And I only ever used the miter saw to rough cut boards.
Mm-hmm.
And it took up so much room.
Yeah.
So it's like, I got rid of it. I built two Krenov saw horses and I use a jigsaw. That's how I rough cut stuff now.
There you
go. It opened up so much space.
A jigsaw, even a circular saw, you know, for maybe some applications, but yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I break down my big boards with a jigsaw anyway, just because I'm worried about kickback on a miter saw or something like that, you know, especially those rough sawn boards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But
yeah. Nope.
Well, before we let you go, so tell us what other pursuits you do outside of woodworking.
So, you know, like I said earlier, my first project ever really was trying to make a drum set. So I'm a drummer. I've been playing since I was 9. So I guess 36 years now or 38 years.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, a studio drummer? Or are you in a band? Are you in multiple bands? Like, what kind of drummer?
I mean, I was in a band actually until about a week ago. and
sorry.
Well, no.
Way to bring up the wound, Sean.
Man.
Yeah, exactly.
My bad.
That's okay. It was not my choice. Two of the members quit all of a sudden, and then it was kind of like, well, I guess we're done. But yeah, I mean, I've played in all sorts of bands, studio work. I've toured, you know, quite a bit in my young, you know, like the 18 through 21 ish years,
nice.
Stuff like that. But yeah, so I love playing, music, playing in bands, doing studio stuff. Other than that, huge car guy, huge Porsche guy.
Oh, well you would love
speaking Jamil. Of Jamil. Yeah.
Yeah. Handworks. I had like what?
Four?
Like four or four five. Or four. 911s parked in front and 1 356. So yeah.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had an 85 911. I sold that to pay for the mini max joiner planer.
Ah,
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how the market is these days.
Well, there was a lot left over, but part of my agreement when selling it, as I told my wife, if I sell this, I'm taking some of the money and I'm buying this joiner player combo. So, you know, other than that, just my life is, my son plays travel soccer, which pretty much consumes my life.
So what kind travel of music soccer. Do you, what kind of music are you into?
Really everything. I mean, my favorite stuff to listen to is probably more on the jazz side.
Okay, cool.
Things,
okay.
But I mean, all the bands I've ever played in, usually it's like rock covers, you know, typical bar band type stuff. But yeah, listening, certainly, you know, jazz, R&B, stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
That is fantastic.
I have a coworker I just actually talked to today. I forget how we got on the subject. He used to be in a band. He's now a, part of our project control, department. But we were talking about just like what concerts we've been to, and he goes, "Well, technically, I think I've seen Ted Nugent 17 times." I said, "Oh, that's cool. How many times were you on stage?" He goes, "Well, that's the 17 times we opened." Like, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, when I was opening and touring, it was much more of like Parliament Funkadelic opened for them, and Morris Day and the Time. So I played in this like 9-piece funk band.
That's awesome.
And we toured all over the Midwest and stuff, and played festivals, and did Morris Day and did Parliament,
Day?
What's that movie? Is it Jay and Silent Bob?
One of the Jay and Silent Bob movies.
Oh yeah,
Strike Back.
Yep, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back with Morris Day and the Time.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and then you got PCU as an old one with Parliament.
That's one of my favorite movies.
Yep.
I love that movie.
Yep.
Oh, that people are familiar with that, but that is a fantastic. Like,
it's a great movie.
Like when I say the word meat tossers, nobody knows what I mean.
You can't wear the shirt of the band you're going to see.
No, that's right.
No, not at all. That's crazy. Did you ever play in Toledo doing those shows?
Yeah. Yep.
Where at? Frankie's or
honestly,
Main Event?
If I'm being honest, I was
I was in a 20. Band, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was 20. I was in a band. I don't remember.
I was touring. I don't really remember the name. I remember there was
off the bus.
Staircase. There was a staircase. And that's about all I remember.
Probably downstairs of Frankie's.
Yeah.
Frankie's was a bar that I saw.
Hello, Toledo.
I saw Smoking Popes. I saw Dinosaur Jr. I mean, but they were all in the basement, and so you had to go into the crappy bar. I can still hear it, surprisingly. But I saw some big bands in very small places, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, back in the day, I saw some big bands in small places. I remember probably, this is just going to date me, but I saw
Kyle's older than us
in the basement of a bowling alley in Dallas. I saw Devo.
Damn.
Wow. That's cool.
In Dallas, they have basements and bowling alleys. Let's just register that.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, well, with that fun news, let's move over to our fortnightly beer choices. So tonight I am drinking something that was inspired by our last guest, who was drinking a milk stout with peanut butter. I am drinking a milk stout with peanut butter and chocolate.
Nice. That's a little higher than the normal Guinness.
Normal Guinness is like 4.2, but hey, it's not bad. And but anyway, it is really, really good. Highly recommended if you can get it in your area. So
nice.
Yeah.
So Brian, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a new one that I've never had before. It's called Dad Shoes. It's by Four Noses Brewing out of Colorado. It's like a citrusy hazy IPA. It's pretty good. I can see why the guy sent it to me. It was part of the beer exchange beers. It's nice. I like it. It's something I would definitely drink again.
I'm thinking that's familiar, but I think Three Floyds has Clown Shoes, which I've had. And it's obviously not the same thing. It's just the name struck me.
Yeah. Well, as the pun would be, it's got like a New Balance shoe on it. The old dad.
The old dad shoes. Yeah.
White socks in it too, but there's not. So yeah, but I like it.
That's the whole dad look, but my kids wear like joggers that show their ankle and high socks above the, and it's a style that the kids wear nowadays that is honestly.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah. I've seen that before too. Yeah. Everyone is wearing the high socks now, and I just
have a preppy thing going on.
It's not, I don't even have a preppy thing. I mean, my kids aren't terribly preppy, but they.
Oh, but that's where that.
Yeah,
comes.
I mean, actually, my youngest, today, black sweats, black shirt, white socks that you can see where his black sweats stop above his Vans. Don't know what he's doing. I don't know what the hell he's doing, but it's a look. I don't know.
Pretty soon they're gonna start tight rolling the bottom of their pants.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
Two layers of polo shirt.
No. Wait till parachute pants come back.
I was going to say, I'm waiting for the skits to make a thing because the girls are wearing the hip huggers like they did back in the 60s and 70s, right?
Yeah.
That's coming back. But man, the skids of the late 80s, early 90s, those big baggy things.
The Jankos.
Yeah.
Jankos with the like 12 inch ankle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They actually.
Oh, Lord.
Went around your shoes like it was that big.
Oh yeah.
Hey, I've seen a few mullets around here, so.
Yeah, mullets are out.
Oh, mullets
sure.
Mullets are everywhere.
Yep.
If you play football in my area, you have a mullet.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think that's Midwest football hairstyle now.
Yeah,
if
hockey
you live in the Midwest
football.
Under 20, you have a mullet.
Yes. Thankfully, my boys stayed away from that. Thankfully.
Yeah.
So, Sean, what are you drinking?
The house beer is on tap tonight. It's Miller Lite in 16-ounce cans. Nothing special there. Garrett, how about you?
No. How about Mark? What's Mark drinking?
Oh, sorry, Mark. I missed you, Mark.
I'm just drinking water tonight, guys.
Mark's on the water train. All good?
Just
feeling
water.
All right?
Gonna stay hydrated. No, just, you know, I sleep better when I drink water.
He's got forklifts to fix, you know?
Yeah, I gotta finish tearing apart my forklift. How about you, Garrett?
Well, I am actually joining Sean with a Miller Lite in a 12-ounce bottle.
All right.
Ooh, bottle.
Oh, yeah. I will say, though, just because, like I said, I'm in Kentucky. As a Michigan boy, I wanted to show up to this thing with my favorite Michigan beer, which is the Founders Dirty Bastard.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went to the store and they didn't have it down here. But if I was in Michigan doing this, that's what I'd be drinking.
even down nice. Where I am, which is only an hour and a half south of you,
yeah,
that's a seasonal maybe. I don't get
right.
I don't get that all the time. I have some aging on a shelf
really?
Out here in the basement, but yeah,
it's a great beer.
I age all my Founders if I can help it when I get it because
sure.
It's all heavy enough to do it. None of it's an IPA that's gonna sour or anything. I've got some Backwoods, some CBS, some KBS. I've got a good collection of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we have Founders and you know liquor stores, upper, you're not going to find it at the grocery store, but yeah, you can get Founders down here all day long.
You do. It's just selected. It's selected ones.
It is
Founders in Walmart.
Yeah,
yeah, but
yeah.
They're
I think they're getting wider. They're from they're not well. At least one of the tap houses isn't far from Flint. I think it's up. Well, it's on the western side, maybe closer to Gaylord up there. But they've got a couple tap rooms up and around there. Between Bell's and Founders, I get like they're. I know they're all up on that.
Yeah, they're all on the west side.
Right.
Well, speaking of the west side, so Garrett, if folks are on the west side of the internet, where can they find you?
at @HMR_Woodcraft on Instagram is pretty much 100% of where you're going to find me. I have a website, hmrwoods.com, on YouTube, HMR Woodcraft, but I lack at updating either of those. Instagram, if I'm not traveling for work, like right now, I'm usually in the shop a couple, 2-3 days a week, and I'm always posting something.
Well, cool. Yeah, YouTube's hard to keep up with, but I just posted a video today, matter of fact.
Nice.
It was a minute and a half video, but anyway, it's up there. It's a little tip and technique on using one of my jigs. So, Brian, what about yourself?
Instagram is where you can find me, and that's just simply Obst Woodworks, and Obst is OBST. Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me on Instagram at Barton.Kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under Kyle Barton or BB Custom Tools. Mark, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Instagram at MarkBuildsIt, or you can subscribe to my newsletter at joineffort.net/ let's go with YT this week. How about you, Sean?
Per usual, you can find me at SeanW78 on most social medias.
All right. Who do we have on feedback this week? I know we got a bunch of folks.
Yeah, I feel like I have to stretch before we start this. So we got two episodes here. So regarding episode 493 with David Judyard. excuse me, Duyard. Our first comment here is from our buddies in Australia, from Lost Trades. And it says, not long now until we see you at our fair. It's regarding the Lost Trades Fair, which if you're in Australia, you better be there. That's phenomenal. And then our second comment here is from Chef Maurice. It says, David, I love him! Exclamation point here. If you know the restaurant, the reference, I'd be proud of you. But my first chair teacher and frequent question answerer over the years, it's always a special treat when we get to hear him talk. Speaking of Anthony Moraes, Chef Moraes, if you don't know, Anthony is an executive chef for the Meta Corporation in the New York area. He was episode 494, and this is a fun one. If you have some time, try and make sure you listen to it. But our first comment here is from Copper John Woodworks, our buddy Jeff Wyatt. He says, great podcast with a couple claps and hallelujah emojis. And then we have
that's jazz hands. It's
not jazz hands. It's high.
Jazz hands, hallelujah.
Clapping jazz hands. Come on now. Right.
Yes.
I don't see Jeff as a cheerleader, but whatever. I'm not here to judge. but our second comment here is from bp.holcomb. Which is Brian, I think his first name is. You should go look at his Instagram feed. It's bp.holcomb, and that's HOLCOMBE. It's really cool. Does a lot of really, what looks like to be like Asian-inspired type things. But he says, awesome, I'll be listening to it. And then, oh boy, here we go. Javier Ralph, P-A-V-I-A, Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, and says, Chef Tony with, it looks to be about a half dozen exclamation points. We actually had about 21 other comments or / emoji strings. So we do appreciate the feedback. If you would like to leave us some comments or criticisms or complaints, you can do so at anywhere that you can record, download your podcast. iTunes, we would appreciate a 5-star review. It helps get the show out in front of other people. And you can also leave comments, obviously, on the MWA Podcast Instagram or any of our Instagrams as well.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.